I said that you could ask questions concerning the ministry. I'm going to share something on the ministry, but I want you to ask questions concerning the ministry. If you have any question, anything you don't understand about the ministry, just ask the question concerning the ministry. Then we'll give you answers. Okay. But after that, then I'll also share something.
Yeah. Daddy, please, I want to ask a question on, like, yeah, seven with your substance.
Yeah, you quoted Luke 16, verse 11 about the unrighteous mammon. Yeah, I wanted to ask, in regards to Titan, if maybe you receive a salary of 200 cedis, and at the end of the month you receive the salary, but it came and let me say, to meet a great need at that time, that you couldn't take your tithe because, like, there was nothing you could do about the whole issue. So you just gave out the money to sort it out, that you are going to pay it in the following month's salary. You will take double tithe. Is it right to do that?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, you know, the tithe is not a law per se, but it's a matter of commitment and maybe the motive. So I don't think. Let's say, for instance, if the money is 200, and it came to meet an emergency, which was a life and death issue. You see, and the money they were taking was 200. Now you took the money to meet that emergency situation, and that there's nothing wrong with that. You just have to give when you get, and we are not going to be, God is not going to say that I'm going to punish you because you failed to give. Like I said, that the tithe is not a law. It's not a law. It's a principle, and not it's a law as in principle, but it's not a law as in thou shalt. You see, it's a principle. So when we apply it, we get the benefits, but we are not to be legalistic about it. So in that case, then later on when you get it, you can pay.
All right, thank you.
Okay, then I'm the one taking it around, but I also have a question, so I want to finish mine. Okay, then yesterday you said something that the Lord, like, you know, the dispensation that the ministry has been through from 2010 to 2011, from 2012 to 2014 to 2013, and from 2014 up to date. It's like, you know, we may not know. But then even as we are leaders and, like, we are working with you, we are co-laborers, if maybe, even if not the details, you can just give us
what?
You can just let us know the dispensation, or, like, in this era, what God is doing in the ministry, so that we can also move with it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll address that.
Amen. Okay, Daddy, my question is like a follow-up question on what Pastor Song was saying about talent. My question is, let's see your work, and like the working that you are working, like, here's the case, like, let's say you pay tax. Like, you pay tax, and from that, apart from paying tithe too, you know that something like you pay for SNET and other things. I want to know, like, when you are calculating for the tax, for the 10%, knowing that, for example,
tithe.
Knowing that, for instance, when you pay for SNET and you go for retirement, you'll be receiving something maybe on the retirement thing. So if you're calculating for the 10% on the tax, do you have to calculate it on the full amount, or like you have to, after the deduction, the amount that will come to you that you have to pay the 10% on. I want to.
Yeah, it's the money that comes into your hand. The money that comes into your hand, that's what you pay your tithe on. The one that comes into your hand.
Daddy, I have two questions. The first one is, in this ministry, if, for instance, I'm like my brother Derek, and then maybe I've found someone that I want to get married to maybe next year, like...
What you are like your brother Derek. Okay, we are listening.
Yes, so Daddy, is there, and maybe I want to marry in TMI, is there a process that I have to go through? Yes, can I marry actually in TMI? Yes. And yes. And
yeah, then, yes. Yeah, there's a process you go through. When you are about to get married, you will be introduced to the process. Yes, that you go through. At the moment, because not many people are married, you know, just a few people in our midst are married, you know. So we don't really have a board or maybe a group responsible for that. Actually, nobody is married here, but we are now going to have some marriages very soon.
Oh, okay.
So when it gets to that time, you will spell out the procedure and everything that one must follow. Yeah.
So, Daddy, my second question is that you realize that when All for Christ started, like TMI wasn't out yet. When we started For Christ and all, and from through that process up to now, a lot of new development has come inside, new activities, wings, bringing out the structure of the ministry. Is it the vision that God gave you about catching, tying them, and then putting fire in their tails, in between their tails? Is it still the vision for the ministry, or is for Or for Christ, is it the general direction the ministry is going?
You know, the vision of God is the main mandate. Is there, but the mandate, the unfolding of the mandate, is not just one thing. For instance, like I was saying, it was only recently that I realized that school of ministry was even part of the mandate, because he said, you put the hearts in the hearts of many people and release them into the harvest. So, as God has said that, how are you going to reach? How are you going to disciple, equip, and release? So all these things are things that God gives illumination as time goes. And then the mandate begins to unfold. So, it unfolds and it develops. Revelation grows. It develops. And by the time you realize, you see that that's when you really get to understand what God said. Then also, it's not when God gives that mandate, there are many other supporting revelations that God also gives, you know, to throw more light on the mandate that he has given. And that's the blueprint. So as we go, we are being led by God. But you see that everything that will come out of that, you can trace it, easily trace it to the mandate. But I'll throw more light on that.
Hello. Okay, thank you. Daddy, following up on the giving and the tithe questions, I want to know, is income or salary the only source of money from which or on which we are to give, or any other sources that comes to the believer?
Income is what comes in. So whatever comes in, whether it's salary or gift, is income. Are you getting me?
Yeah.
Yes. So whatever comes into your hand,
it should not be only from being paid for a work you've done.
No. I mean, okay. Even a gift, you can give tithe on it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Daddy, please, I want to make an inquiry about the headship. The headship. You were talking about the hierarchical categorization of authority when it comes to the church, as Christ being the head of the man being the head of the woman. I want to know, to what Ingrid optimum can a pastor can a pastor say that?
Please, we are in Ghana, please.
to what point can a pastor say that a married woman is the spiritual daughter, since the woman has been shaped to be there, to be under the man as a spiritual head? Can the pastor still say that a married woman is a spiritual daughter?
Ideally, you see, he can say she's a daughter only in the sense of maybe he's a pastor and she's a member. And of course, she can still be a daughter of a pastor. But let's say that your husband, you want to do something. Your husband says no. You must listen to your husband. If it's not against what God has said, what I mean is that your husband's words, they carry more weight. To understand that even his prayers carry more weight. If he's spiritual, his prayers carry more weight than even your pastor. Because it's a marriage, is a home. And the man is the authority figure. So your pastor is an overseer over the two of you, okay? Or maybe even if you are the only one going to that church, he's an overseer over you. He prays for you and all that. But when you come home, your husband is your overseer.
What about in a situation where the husband is also a pastor?
Oh, then that's all. Then he's your pastor. Are you getting me? No, but if the husband is a pastor, the headship is not about pastor or no pastor. The headship is a relationship. He's responsible. For instance, your pastor, he's not the one who is going to tell you the number of children you should have. That is a decision with your husband, not your pastor. So your pastor has a limit to how much he can interfere in your home. He can't interfere without your husband's permission. I get it. But you see, your pastor has spiritual oversight responsibility over you. And so he can give you instructions and all that.
So does the authority permeate through the corridors of spiritual realms or physical realms when it comes to the husband being the head? Since there are many women in church today who only listen to the physical aspect of their husband, but the spiritual aspect, their pastors are there to take care of that.
No, you see, that's why I'm saying that as a man, you must be a spiritual person to lead the family. You shouldn't leave that to your pastor to do for you. The reason why pastors have to play that role is because some of the men are not playing it. Your husband, as a spiritual head of the family, is supposed to lead the family spiritually. But when there's a slack, maybe the pastor will step in. The pastor is leading the whole church, not only your family. So your small family, you must be able to take care of your small family.
Good evening. Please, I wasn't here during your whole session. I was invited by your daughter, Esther. Please, my question is very simple. I want to ask about the fatherhood, like sons and fathers. And when the brother was talking, he made mention of it. I want to use my own example, on my own life example. Please, I was raised by Pastor Steve. That's my spiritual father. And there are others.
Mensa.
No.
Pinsu.
No, this is Pastor Steve.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's my spiritual father. Now, he wasn't just praying for me or talking to me. He played certain fatherly roles in my life.
Okay.
At school. And now I'm having other men of God too, who also speak into my life. I wanted to ask, who do I listen to in certain situations? Like, I want to take a decision, a life decision. He comes, Pastor Steve says, okay, take A. And the pastor says, okay, take B. Then this one says, maybe take C. At that point, God, Paul made mention of, he said, you have many instructors, but you don't have fathers. So the place of fatherhood in the life of maybe a young man or a young Christian, I wanted to know, in case you have more than one man of God, now that I've come to meet you, you can speak into my life, and I'll see you as a father. So at that point, what happens to your words of wisdom and that of Pastor Steve and the others that I may know? How do we...
Okay, you know, as you were talking, you said that he played certain fatherly roles in your life, even whilst we were students, or maybe in way back in SHS and all that. It depends on the extent of the role, whether it was spiritual rules or it was just physical rules. You see, for instance, maybe if the role he was playing was more like helping you in your academic life and all that, that is a physical role that he was playing in your life. But if right from that time, he has been nurturing you, he has been feeding you spiritually, you have sat under his teachings, his ministry, and you have come thus far, then he's your father. See, the same way his words have carried you to this point, his words too can shape you and give you wisdom for the life ahead. It does not mean that you will not listen to any other person. But you have a reference point. When you are confused, where do you go? See, when you meet conflicting views, who do you go for him to speak and settle the controversy? That is your father. Yes. And sometimes when we, if right now you want to get married and you meet your wife, who are you going to take her to? Like, to introduce that, I want to get married to this lady. Who are you going to? Are you going to go to him? Should I, oh, daddy, this is the woman I want to marry. Or maybe I've seen a woman I want to marry, so can you guide me on it? There may be other technical things that he may not have the necessary resources to deal with. For instance, maybe you want to choose a course. He's not a lecturer or somebody, you know, so he might not be able to guide you and say that, oh, don't take this course, or that. Or maybe you want to do an investment. See, maybe he may not be in that area. That one, you can get an advice. But even that one, you can also take by listening to what he has got to say. But when we say a father, you see, David says something. He said, your eyes saw my unformed body when I said they were not formed. So somebody who has spoken into your life when you didn't know your left and your right, and has spoken into your life, and now by the grace of God, you know your left and your right. Now people see you and they see that, what's your name? Eben. People see you and they say that, oh, Eben is very good, you know, like Eben can do this stuff. If I get Eben in my ministry, it will help me. So now when they see you, then they come to you and say, I want to father you. Just because maybe you came to them for counsel and then they spoke into your life or gave you counsel, doesn't mean that they are your father. You see, so that's what happens these days. People will just meet people and they don't know them from Adam. Just meet them and see their potential, see that they are good. And then they try to pick them. Say, oh, he's my son. Meanwhile, you don't know how the journey he has made. The father is involved with you on the journey. That's why I said, if you meet somebody, you go to him because Maybe even before you met somebody, he has been counseling you on relationship, and he's part of your life. You see, that's how it is. But you can have many people who inspire you. People can inspire you, but your father teaches you. People can inspire you. People can give you words of wisdom and advice and all that. One thing that we must learn is how to discern the voice of strangers. There are people who are not strangers per se. Others are also strangers. Others are strangers. And when you meet people on the street and they start giving you words, you don't just take those words and allow them to sit with you. You must go to your father. Go to the one who speaks into your life and put the thing before him and let him speak into your life. Kabilin said that he was in traffic. Then somebody came and said, "Man of God, I have a word for you." And he didn't even know it. He said, "I have a word for you. The Lord says this, this, that." And what the person was saying was true. The person said, "And your wife is going to die this year." Then he said, "I don't know you. You are not my father. I don't listen to strangers. Thank you." Then he moved on. Simple. I hope you understand.
So I want to ask a question in the case of tithe. At my first time in ministry, person that picked me up is Eben Damian, by the grace of God. But he taught us about things about tithe. He don't believe in tithe. And I was nurtured in that way of concerning the tithe issue.
Okay.
So what if it happened that, for instance, where I am now, they pay tithe. But me, I pay tithe. But to me, I don't take it that it's relevant. But I pay just to avoid trouble as a pastor. But where I was from the first, they don't believe in tithing. And I was taught about tithing. I've made a research with my belief system and everything. I don't believe that tithe works for me.
Okay.
So, to me, should I have to continue to pay the tithe? Or should I open up to the pastor that this thing I'm paying, I don't believe it? As for me to open up or for us to settle it down. So, I don't know. How should I go about it?
Did he always teach against tithe? Or he just recently?
At first.
When did you meet him?
When I was in Nigeria, he has a pastor ministry, a pastor's association. So I normally used to follow him up. He's just like a pastor.
Okay. Is it recently or so many years ago?
I left Nigeria 2015. So I was with him all throughout 2015.
Because I know that he used to teach about tithe. But later on, he had revelations, deeper truth about it. In the New Testament, and then he was saying that you don't have to pay tithe. And then also, you know, he's teaching things like the believer there's no sin, you know, like you are, I mean, things like that, you know. And he calls it the believer's heritage. Okay. But I've listened to him, you know, he even came to CCC in 2007. Yeah, and he preached. He's a very good preacher. But the issue about tithe, like I said, it's not the law. We are not under the law. You understand? So it's not a law that if you don't pay, God has cursed you and all that. But we are talking about a system where you will be able to honor God with your substance on a consistent, progressive basis. Okay. And we are talking about how the early church, how they lived their lives, and how you don't see tithe mentioned per se, because it was Christianity, not Judaism. Okay, so there was nothing like tithe. You don't see tithe being practiced in the Acts of the Apostles. You don't see Paul teaching on tithe in the Epistles. You don't see tithe in the New Testament per se, but the principle is still there. The principle is that the principle of Galatians 6:6. Let him who is taught and who teaches continue in good things. That means that when somebody teaches you, you must show it to the person's life. The principle of 1 Corinthians 9:11, that if I've ministered material things to you, you must minister, if I've ministered spiritual things to you, you must minister material things to me. That is a principle. So people who feed us and who devote themselves to the teaching of the word and they lead us, they need to be supported. They need to be supported. So we have the teacher's teaching offering. That is, Galatians 6:6. As I'm teaching you, I'm giving you spiritual substance. Then you sow material substance into my life. That's a principle. It's the same principle of the tithe. That's why I said the storehouse is talking about where you get your food from, that there may be meat in my house. Okay, so it's a support system. In the Old Testament, they had support systems for the Israelites. They had support system. Now, the tithe is also a saint's relief system. For instance, if somebody is into trouble in the ministry, somebody goes into, somebody has financial issues and all that, there are widows and people who are fatherless and all that, the ministry is supposed to be able to take care of those people. You know, so the tithe is also something like that. They had three types of tithe in the Old Testament. And they had the one that was for the priest. See, then the one was for the person himself and his family. The one was for the orphans, the widows, and the fatherless. Three tithes. But we have various applications of it in the New Testament. Not necessarily strictly paying of tithe, where they say that if you fail to pay, you must add 5% or must add 20% to, 20% to what you should have paid. That's all those things are old system. It's just a principle of honoring God in a consistent and progressive manner. Then also we talk of the testimony of tithe, the blessing that comes with paying of tithe. I mean, literally, when you pay, God honors you. God honors it. He honors your faith that you are telling God that. You know, for instance, I've taught about these things, and I have about how many messages? About 10 on finances and money and all. Maybe I'll advise that Pastor Elijah will get you all the messages. I talk about deliverance from eating, the kingdom principle of stewardship, the bank of heaven. I talked about he teaches me to profit and breaking the poverty mindset and all that. These are teachings on finances and tithe and all that. Okay, but then the principle of the tenth in the Old Testament, even in Pharaoh's time, Pharaoh took 1/5 of all the produce of the people. 1/5, he took 1/5. 1/5 is greater than 1/10. Okay, now when God brought his life out, he said, "Give me a tenth." Now, the tenth is the number 10 is a number for deliverance. So when Abraham was arguing with God, bargaining with God for souls in Sodom, he got up to 10. And it was like both Abraham and God knew that he couldn't go below 10. So if you find 10 people, are you going to destroy the city? God said, no, if I find 10, I can't destroy the city. And they couldn't go below 10. Abraham didn't say 5. He knew that 10 was the number for deliverance. God asked Moses to take a tenth, an omer of manna, and put it in the Ark of the Covenant. Now, an omer is a tenth of an ephah. You see, so the manna had a tenth, 10%, let me say 10% of the manna was in the Ark of the Covenant as a memorial before God. So that's where the principle is coming from, that it is a principle of insurance premium. You pay a premium, you are committing the 90% to God, telling God that this is all yours. But I don't, for instance, me, I don't pay 10%. I've gone beyond 10%. I pay more than 10%. Every month from 2002, started paying more than 10%. Then from 2014, I went to double. You know, I'm not bound by strict regulation. And apart from that, I don't say I've paid 10%, maybe 20%, so that's all. No, I just give of my heart to God. My everything that comes from my hand, I ask my question. No, there's a seed part, there's a food part. Which one is the seed part? You see, God gives food to the eater and seed to the sower. You see, so every money that you get, there's a part that you must sow. And that part could be the first and best. If you can't give 10%, I mean, because 10% is the what they used to give in the law, you see. But we are seeing that New Testament giving is more than that. No, it's a giving of your whole self, selling your house and all that. Right? If you can't do that, then you can start from 10%, and then gradually God will lead you, and then you can step into New Testament giving. Because many people who speak against tithe, don't really give. With a section of people who have really, really, like I trust, like what you are saying, like Abel Damina, no, but there are some people who talk against tithe. When you at the end of the month, when you check the amount of money they give, then you compare to how much people who pay tithe give, you see that these people, they don't give as much. So it's not a law, but it's a principle that can be activated to be blessed. All the things that are associated with it, like if you don't pay, you are cursed and all that. That is not, it's not true. God, there's no curse for the believer. There's no curse for the believer. It's only blessing. But you, and Oedipo was saying that he said he's an addicted tither. Said he's an addicted tither. And the way to say is he said he's an unrepentant tither. So if you look at the way the book's life, how God has blessed him, he says he's an addicted tither. I mean, just taking that one, you want to tithe. Look at the way it's like, how God has blessed him financially. And if he says he's an unrepentant tither, he will want to tithe. Somebody say if you don't pay tithe, things will be tight. Yeah, so it's not a law, but we must do it out of our hearts. Yeah. Okay.
Please, Daddy, I want to ask a question on the tax that is tightened in the church, rather. Please, if I am someone that at the time or at the moment or at the end of a month that I'm supposed to give tithe, maybe it gets to that time or that moment, and then, like, if I'm going to give out the 10% of what I've gotten, like, my heart is not happy, like, I don't feel happy giving it out. What should I do? Should I leave, or I should just do it by force?
Why are you not happy to give it? That's the question. Is it because when the money comes and you think 10% is too much?
No, it's not like that, but I don't know how to explain it.
You see, okay, let me tell you this. You see, there are two powers that compete for our hearts, God and Mammon. And Mammon works in this way, covetousness and selfishness. Mammon has a work that he does in the world, that is to promote evil ways of making money, reward people who use evil, who promote evil, Sakawa and all those people. Mammon is in charge of that. The Mammon has another side of his work in the church, that is to make believers selfish and covetous. You see, so God, Mammon is God's number one enemy. God will never bless you if Mammon has a grip on your heart. Because he said you can't serve two masters. There are only two masters. He didn't mention Satan. He said God and Mammon. Mammon is in charge of satanic storehouses. He can release money to you when you serve, worship the devil. You know, if you see people who are just releasing money in churches, satanic agents who are parading as men of God, who are just coming out with money. Sometimes they can perform magic and they can come. These are all Mammon's works. People giving lotto numbers in churches, they are all part of Mammon's agents. But then it comes to who has a grip on your heart. The reason why God introduces giving is to break the grip of Mammon on our heart. So for as long as Mammon has a grip on your heart, you will find it difficult releasing resources to God. You will find it very difficult because money is two things, your blood and your sweat. Sorry. Money is your blood and your sweat. That is why let me say it this way. Your holiness and your godliness, it's not really complete if Mama has a grip on your heart. Jesus Christ met the man, and the man, he said that, what can I do to inherit eternal life? And he said, you know the law, do not commit adultery, do not bear false witness. But the man said, oh, I've been doing all these things right from my youth. He was a holy man. But Jesus realized that his holiness was not complete because Mammon still had the grip on his hand. So he said, go and sell all your things. Give to the poor. That was when he realized that Mammon had the grip on his hand. The man's holiness was not complete because the grip of Mammon was still on his hand. You see, so God will do everything to help us to break that grip of Mammon on our heart. You see, somebody went to a certain place, a church, and she said that when she was going to the church, she said one thing that she has been battling with is giving. Especially when the man of God comes and says, I want people to come and sow this seed. So she said that when she was going to the church, as she was about to step into the building, then she felt God telling her, today, when they call for 5,000, go and stand there. She said, hey. So lo and behold, the man of God who came to minister called 5,000 to support the church, what they were doing. I think it was a building. Then, because God had touched her, she just got up and went and stood there, 5,000. Right after church, somebody that she knows came and greeted her and then shook her hand and said, hey, it's a long time since I saw you. They said, I've been wanting to give you something. Then he put his hands in his pocket and gave her money. The amount was 5,000 cedis. And that changed her attitude towards giving. God used that to tell her that when I say give, I'm not trying to take away from you. I'm trying to give you an opportunity for Mammon's grip to be released, right? So that I can bless you. Before God will transfer the wealth of the world to the church, he will make sure that the hand of Mammon is not on the heart of the church. And one of the ways that God delivers us from Mammon is through the discipline of tithing and giving. So tithing is a training wheel. It's a training wheel for extravagant giving. Actually, the New Testament type of giving is extravagant giving. But you can't give extravagantly if you have not been trained to give consistently. Like now, even the 10% you can't give. So how can you give your land, sell your land and give to God? It's an example. So God will help you to overcome the 10% so that you will not fear the 10%. A time will come, you see that you will not fear. Money will just come into your hand. It will just go into God's work. You will not even think about it. And you see money just passing through your hand like that, just coming like that, because you are always giving out. And it's coming like that, always giving out. That's why I said that. Well, if God has given you a prophecy that you're going to be rich, then you must start giving. You must start practicing how to give. How to give sometimes for it to cost you. Yes. Because God will break Mammon's grip on your heart before he releases you into abundance. Otherwise, when you get abundance, your security will be in abundance. But when Mammon's grip is on your heart, you are not intimidated by billions of cedis. You can get money and you will not collapse. Yes. The spirit of poverty works in different ways. One way it works is the fear of money. The fear of money. That's one way it works. And one way it works is the fear of lack of money. The spirit of poverty, if it's broken over your life, you will not fear money. You will not fear lack of money. You will flow. So, you know, and the book is good. I've written the book, you know, but they are still working on it. I hope that it will come out soon so that you can. I taught this series 2017, January to March, January to April. The Godhead or the Goldhead, Deliverance from Satan's Eden, the Kingdom Principle of Stewardship, Understanding the Bank of Heaven, Elements of Divine Prosperity. He teaches me to profit. Breaking the poverty mindset. Yes. You can get all and read and listen. Okay. Are we done with the question? Okay.
Please, Dad, I want to ask another question. That is related to this one. But with that one, it concerns offering in the church, tithing, and then seed sowing. Actually, if you are looking at these three things,
maybe sowing into the life of a man of God, or maybe sowing into something in the church that is needed, and then offering in the church and tithing. If you look at these things, it's like it have to do with supporting the kingdom business, or maybe storing precious things in heaven for you. So looking at these things, like I'm forced to ask, or maybe there is something in my heart that is bothering me. If like these things are maybe focused on similar purpose, or maybe if they have similar purpose in our heart, or maybe in our lives, why is it that we don't maybe focus on one thing so far as it plays the same role throughout the three, and then we have to separate the three, and then maybe we go on each one.
Okay. I think you need to listen to understand the Bank of Heaven. Because, you know, just as we have financial instruments, we have treasury bills, we have fixed deposits, we have treasury notes, we have what else? What else do you have? Yes, commercial papers, okay. Savings, okay. Who take the savings like that? These are financial instruments, you know. And they say we have financial instruments in the Bank of Heaven. The giving is not only giving to a man of God or giving to the church. Giving to the poor is giving. Giving to orphans, that is also one stream. There are about four major streams, you know. I'm not going to go into them. But for instance, one major stream is giving to orphans and widows, the fatherless and the strangers. That's one stream. That one has its own reward. In fact, that one, God says, if you give money to the poor, you have lent it to God. He said he will repay. Because God says, owe no man nothing. So God doesn't want people to know that he's owing you. That's why I said, when you are giving alms, don't let your right hand see what your left hand is doing. So that you don't have to trumpet it and say that you gave this to the poor, because you are saying that God owes me this amount. That's one stream. There's another stream which is giving to a man of God, woman of God, is another stream. Giving to support kingdom business is another stream. There are different financial instruments. And God can lead you to give in any of these ways.
My question is, the Bible says a husband and the wife, they are one. In fact, one flesh. So can you bring your income together, take a tenth of it, and then give it up?
Oh, but it's the same thing.
The same thing.
Yes. It's the same thing.
Okay. Then my second question is, like, I've decided to give a tenth. And then assuming I take 1,000 in a month, 1,000 cedis in a month, and then out of that, my tithe should be 100 cedis. So can I give, like, maybe for this month, I'll give all the 1,000 for 10 months, so that for the subsequent months, I wouldn't be paying tithe. Is that one also?
You can give 1,000 for 10 months, you can give 10,000. Or you want the 1,000 to be for every month 100. If you know that you are going to pay 100, the thing is that if the way of receiving the tithe is monthly, and you want to pay that one, no problem with that. But you don't be in a hurry to pay and get it off your shoulders. that becomes legalistic, you know. The thing is, anything that stirs controversy in the church, you must understand that the devil knows it will hit. Because this issue of giving is very controversial. Because money is the ultimate idol whose grip must be broken over people. The ultimate idol is mammon. He's a serious spirit, mammon. He's a very, very dangerous, fierce spirit. He's the only one who competes with God. He has a boldness to compete with God. Because, you see, when Adam fell, things were controlling his heart. attachment to things. So what God does is God delivers you from things, from attachment to things. That's why he gave them plenty of gold and silver, and he took them to the wilderness where they couldn't get anything to buy with their gold. In order to let them know that your gold is useless. Because in the wilderness, there's no store, no shops to buy, to use your gold. Even though you are loaded with gold, you can't spend it. What is $100 million to a cockroach? Pippa. You leave your bundle, $100 million, and put it in your wardrobe. The mice and the cockroaches, they will just come and chew all. You see, we have chosen to give these things value. See, and then we have chosen to allow them to control us. Because we assign values to them. That when you have 100, when man felt the need to be secured. Because man saw that God was not with him. And he had to fend for himself. God never created Adam to use the gold in the Garden of Eden. There was gold in Eden, but God never told Adam to eat, to use the gold. God placed Adam in Eden as a gardener, not a farmer. And he was just doing gardening for pleasure. Everything was supplied. Everything. But you never hear that Adam needed gold. And everything could have gone wrong for everyone to get some. So Adam was supposed to be a distributor of God's resources for all creation, all mankind. When man fell, man realized the need to now hoard. Because I must think of tomorrow too. Maybe tomorrow I will not have, so today I must get and then hoard. So that's how shortage came into this world. Do you know that the resources of this world is enough to feed everybody? We will never need to borrow anything from Mars or Jupiter. God gave the earth enough resources to feed everybody. The only problem is that we don't have enough distributors. So the issue of distribution is what God wanted to solve. That's why when revival came, as many as had lands, they sold their land, they sold their houses, they brought money and put it under the feet of the apostles, and they distributed to many as they had need. They distributed. God broke the grip of mammon on the heart of the people. They distributed. Divided. You see, that is why God wanted to have mercy on Zacchaeus, and God said, "Zacchaeus, come." He said, I'll come to your house today. When Jesus came to his house, you know, Zacchaeus, listen to this. When Jesus came to his house and they were all eating, and everybody was happy, Zacchaeus said, "I give half of my possession to the poor. If I have cheated people, I restore fourfold." You know what Jesus Christ said? Today, salvation has come to this house. What salvation? Deliverance from mammon. Mammon is an enemy that God hates. What will let God separate himself from you as a child of God is mammon. Because you can't serve both God and mammon. That's why I said, when money enters your heart, God leaves. Even as a minister, when the day money enters your heart, God will leave. One of the fast-track ways of losing the anointing is covetousness. When money becomes your motivation, God leaves. There are many people that God has left them. When I say left them, I'm not saying left them as in he's not with them. I'm saying that they have left God, they have missed God. Because money became the motivation. Money came in. So we must be careful of how. So these are opportunities that God has given us to be free from mammon. Give to the extent that when they mention money, you don't find your face. And right now, you see, in the church, people are tired of giving. Because of the gimmicks that we have used to force them to give. Yes, that's why they are tired. And because of the lies that we tell them. We tell them lies and we use gimmicks and all that. They will take their money. So today, watch social media. You see people talking against pastors and giving and all that and all that. But giving is a legitimate thing in the church, it's something we must do as believers. Do it with cheerfulness and gladness. When we say offering time, blessing time, we are actually saying offering time, stressing time. We are going to stress you and stretch you. Say, come and sow, come and sow. We will let you sow and even sow. So somebody was taking for and said, look, come and sow for your unborn children. How many children do you want to give birth to? Say, five. Come and sow 1,000 cities for each one of them. I'm telling you the truth. Maybe my people went to sow for their unborn children. Come and sow for your unborn child. It's as if God spends cities and dollars. That's how we have made it look like that God spends cities and dollars. But that's not it. But we need to teach people the right thing and then leave them to take decisions. That's what we do here. We will teach you the right thing. I will not force you, but I will teach you the right thing. And I will teach you what I do, what I practice. I will not teach you something I don't practice. I will teach you what I practice. I am a giver. I give. Yes. That's one of the things that I do. I give, really give. And I'll not come and tell you to give if I don't give. I give. And I know that the blessings of giving, you see, it's not only financial blessings. Let me tell you something. Do you know why sometimes God will ask you to sow money and then it will provoke a spiritual blessing? Because money is a medium of exchange. You can add, money is a medium of exchange. Money is a medium where physical and spiritual things, they change hands. That's what Paul said, if I've ministered spiritual things, ministered material things, it's a medium of exchange. So God can actually tell you, go and give money. I remember the first time I had open vision, 2011, I was in Accra, and I was going on a 40-day fast. And I was praying with Ephesians 1, 17 to 19. Then when I started the fast, 2 days into the fast, the Lord spoke to me. I was coming to him. Then he said, take money. Go and give the money to this servant of mine. And the man was at Ejusu. He's a prophet. He's a friend of mine. Not somebody who is higher, a colleague. So I just stopped. I just went to Ejusu. Actually, it's not Ejusu. It's at Adiyantem. I just went to Adiyantem and I said, Prophet Robert, God said I should bring you this. So I didn't tell him anything. I just said, God said I should bring you this. And I gave him the money. It was only 200 cedis, not much. You know, then when he took the money, he said, you know something? I knew you'd be coming. I knew God said that today he will send the raven to bring me some money. I said, so me, I'm a raven, eh? I said, hey, you have insulted me. I didn't know I was a raven. Then he said, let's pray. As we were praying, then he stopped and said, you, I know you to be a businessman. I don't know you to be a pastor. He didn't know I was even in ministry. He said, my Lord said I should pray for you for impartation of prophetic gifts. I said, oh, well, if God says pray, then pray. God didn't tell him that this is why I'm coming to sow the seed. You see, you don't go to one of God and say, take this money and pray that I receive an impartation. You are like Simon the sorcerer. Take this and give me this power that I too, when I lay hands, people will see the Holy Spirit. That is wrong. You just have to sow the seed. Allow the man of God to be sensitive to God to release a blessing. Sometimes you don't need to, he doesn't need to pray for you. The blessing is released. So when he prayed, from that time, I started having open visions. From that time, sometimes I'm ministering, I'll just look at you, I'll just see something about you. I never used to have that. That's from that time that I started having that. It started coming gradually. So it got to a point where I could really, really see. But you see, so it was a seed that I sowed that did the spiritual thing. There was a time when somebody brought me £100. Then, when it was £100, that very evening, I had a dream. And in the dream, the man of God had come to me, and I was escorting him. So when I was cutting him, then he was almost gone. He turned and said, that money so and so brought, make sure you sow or don't take even one person. Make sure you give all to this man of God. Sow it in his ministry. Man of God was in Nigeria. So I went to his branch in Edu, at Edu. And I went to his branch pastor. Then I said, I want your senior pastor's personal account. I want to put the money in his personal account. He said, no. The same church, but put the money, you can put the money in my branch. I said, no, I want his personal account. The man, it took me 3 weeks to get the account. Just the senior pastor's account. At first, he gave me the wrong account. I was always on him. I said, please, you are delaying me. I've been instructed to release the money to him. So after 3 weeks, I got the account, went to Ecobank, did rapid transfer because I didn't want to lose one CD. I had to pay extra because I said, don't deduct the commission from the money. I'm sending the whole amount and I'll add my own money to pay the extra commission. The day I did that transfer, that same evening, I had a dream. The man of God came. Then he lay down on me like that and spoke into my life. That very night that I was able to sow the money into his account. So you see, this one, God leads us personally. This one is a private affair. God led me to give that money. And you see that I received a result, a spiritual result. If you give money, you are partaker of an altar. Sacrifice connects you to an altar. Every sacrifice connects you to an altar. There are altars. There are people that you give money to, and you are connected to their altar. There are demonic altars that are in their rooms. You are connected to that altar because of the money. It's a medium of exchange. Okay, I can't talk about that because if I start talking about that, we will not close. You know, because I have a lot to share about that. So when the book comes, then you get a book and read, or get the teachings and then listen to the teachings.
But please, can I ask a last question relating to? Yeah, I want to ask on if you're a man of God and you are working with your senior pastor, and like the church pays you, you receive a salary from the church, and are you supposed to pay the tithe of tithe to your senior pastor, or you should pay to the church? I want you to just elaborate on this tithe of tithe and also on first fruits.
Okay, you know, usually what happens is that in a church, when they take the tithe, every church has its own system. Some churches, when they take the tithe, you all pay your tithe. Then they take 10% of the tithe to the regional headquarters. Regional headquarters take the 10% of the tithe they've received to national headquarters. It is out of that 10% that they use to pay the national leaders. And the 10% at the region, they will use, have something to do with it. Okay, so, but in the Bible, the Levites, they paid tithe, the priest. And the tenth of the tithe that the people gave the priest, they also paid tithe 10 to the high priest family. So in a way, it is not wrong to do that. In a way, it's not wrong to do that. For instance, you can, if let's say that I am the senior pastor here, and then we, you are a pastor and you pay tithe, you get money, then you are paying your tithe. The tithe, you can pay the tithe to your senior pastor. Some churches, they do it like that. We don't have anything like that. But sometimes they do it like that. But if you do it like that too, it's not wrong. You can also just to put it in the offering bowl. Sorry. First fruit. Actually, there's in the New Testament. Strictly speaking, there's no first fruit in the New Testament. There's only one place the Bible talks about first fruit. It's talking about those of us who are fed, like Jesus Christ, the first fruit of the resurrection and all that. The first fruit principle is in the Old Testament. And what it was that You honor God with the first of your produce, the very first ones. If it is maize, your first harvest, you honor God. See, these are principles that are personal principles. I remember my mother, what he used to do was that she was having a farm. When they start laying eggs, she would collect all the first, she had the off determined, the first fruit, she would send it to pastors. When she's about to sell birds, she sometimes can breed birds, broilers, and the birds that she will breed, all the birds will be given to pastors. So every Christmas you see a truck with many birds, chicken, and then they will be distributing to pastors. That was her way of giving first fruits. So that one is a personal thing. She did it out of conviction. And she had results for that. Okay, for instance, the beginning of this year, the Lord spoke to me and said that any money I receive in January, whether it is money from work or money as a seed or whatever, any money I shouldn't touch it. So the whole of January, all the money I received plus something I took as first fruit on behalf of our company, then I added all. An amount was quite big. I've never sown such a seed like that in my life. It was very big. So I put the money, and then I prayed, and I asked God. I said, okay, I've done it. I've gathered it. Who should I give it to? Then I had a dream. In the dream, I saw one man of God. Then he called me. Then I was seated before him. Then he asked for oil. They brought oil. Then he poured oil into his hand and smeared my eyes with the oil. When he did that, he said, where is the money? Then I woke up and I knew that God was directing me to give the money to the man of God. So I just looked for, he's in Accra, but he was having a program in Kumasi here. And I was in Accra, but the program was Thursday, 1st February. So I had to come to Kumasi, come and package the first fruits, and then go and give it to him. After the program, I went and I gave it to him. In a dream, he prayed for me that a door should be opened for me in heaven. That's what he prayed for me. Then when I went to him, he said, what is the prayer topic? What should I pray for? I said, oh, no. I just want to obey God. Thank you, sir. And I just decided to turn and go. Then he said, oh, let's pray. Then he said, Father, let a door be open for him in heaven. I opened my mouth. I was so shocked. The same prayer he prayed for me in the dream was the exact prayer he prayed for me physically. But you see that I've not come to teach that bring your first fruit, because it's a personal instruction God gave me. I've not taught you that at the end of the month, every January, bring all your money. I could have done that. Say, hey, God has given me a revelation. Every January, everybody bring all your money. Come and sow into my life. But I've not taught you that because I believe it was a personal instruction. And God knows why he made that demand on me. Maybe there was a little mammon that had to be broken. Maybe it was left with something small that had to be broken. And this offering, God, this is the highest I have given ever at one setting in my life. Highest I've given ever at one setting. If I mention the amount, some of you will get up and go. But I believe that God has a reason for giving me that direction. So God can sometimes stretch you and stretch your faith. Don't worry. When God, and you see, that same man that I received some seed for people too. And all the seed I received, I have a box in my study where sometimes I keep my tithe. You know, like when I get money, I just take 20% and I just put it there. Sometimes even more. I don't care. I just take it. Once it goes there, I don't take it. I will never go and take it. I just put it there. I will just, God will just tell me, go and do it. I'll just put it away. That's all. I'm going away. So all the anything that people gave him to sew up, I'll just take them, go and put it in the box. I didn't spend it. And God said, when I had that instruction, I was like, ish, January, you know, January is a month that is usually. And God said, I know why I told them not to gather manna on Saturdays, on the seventh day, because I was going to, they had to gather double on the sixth day. And because I knew that the seventh day they won't come out, I made sure I give them double on the sixth day. And the Lord told me that that's a way of ensuring that my brooks will never run dry. But see, as you have heard it, you don't have to say that I'm also going to practice it. It's rhema. It came by rhema. Maybe you, God will not lead you that way. Maybe you, God will tell you from January to June, break all your salary. Yes. Maybe God will tell you from, but you see, it was, when I did my national service, my first pay, I sold it. When I started working, my first month pay, I sold it. That one was not an instruction. I just wanted to do it. National service, my first pay, I didn't touch it. I took all the money to church, I sold it. When I started working, my first salary, when I started, my first salary was 250 Ghana cedis. Yes. Those days, I took it and I went and sold it. Everything. I didn't take anything from it. When I got married, people came to sow into our lives. And we had money. I just took, you see, I didn't calculate 10%. I took a bulk of it and I divided it into two. I went and sold one at CCC, my church. Then I went and sold one in the life of my counselor, the one who counseled us, Methodist priest. And we just went and sowed the seed and said, we are sowing this into your life. Because, and all these things, like, God was just leading me by conviction. I didn't have anything that I was following or something. So, well, when God leads you, then you follow. That's all. Okay. Now, yeah.
Daddy, our brother said, you were saying something that the tithes, offerings, the seeds we sow, they are used to support kingdom business. My question is quite out of context. You see, recently the government was deliberating on taking taxes from the church. So if we, the members or the Christians, are to give our tithes and our offerings, and the church is to pay the tax, are they going to use that money? And even if they use that, is it appropriate for the church to use that money as tax? Or
the tithe as tax?
Yeah, and the offerings, like the money that comes into the church.
No, they were not going to tax the offering. They were going to tax commercial activities that the church is engaging. For instance, selling of oil and all that. I'll tell my wife that, see, the government should not dare, because those who bear the brunt of it are still the church members. But if you are taxing oil, they'll come and say, and then oil, you know, you are two. And then oil, you know, you are, today we are selling the oil for 500 cedis because we are paying tax on the oil. And they'll pass it on to the ordinary Ghanaian who we are trying to protect. So it will not work. Kokum Chacha will tell you that. Why are you? You see, so people will pass it on to the church members. And somebody who is sick, and who has problems, who has come for emergency, when you see now the oil is 500, no matter what, you have to go and get money and come and pay and take the oil. So there, the government, yeah, the pastors will not lose. It's the members who will lose. That's why I was saying that he should not try. He's going to worsen the case. They will just pass it on to the members like that. And the members will pay. If you see how people, how they sometimes have to go and borrow money to come and pay because they have a problem, and the prophet says that you must bring 2,000 Ghana cedis. Well, for 2,000, bruh, next 2 weeks, next 2 weeks, we'll be. Next, we ask it that 500 by me to mom. For we ban a man, dear mom. Nonsense. Sheer nonsense. And people don't know that these are charlatans. People just follow and then they just follow.